how do you make that super exploitation? If you've got a situation where half the people or more on Earth live off $2 a day, then that is a normal situation, not super. And what is abnormal is what is happening in Detroit. As even though they are exploited at the point of production there, they live compared to people in the rest of the world, you know, extremely well. So it seems to me like you cannot have a clear picture of class or anything in the world if you leave this mass of people out of the equation. Do you see what I'm saying? And that is what has been happened. That is what's happened. They just become footnotes. We become footnotes. We become and significant only in defining the reality that's in Europe and North America. And so we say this. We agree with Marx that wage slavery requires, as a pedestal, slavery pure and simple. We're talking about a whole political economy of the world that was constructed of colonialism. Even this thing that refers to slavery that happened with Africans and with the rest of us, the whole political economy of the world. That is why Bush is trying to reestablish direct white colonial power in the world today, because the crises of people taking back these resources. That is the fundamental crisis that they're fighting and trying to deal with. We say that in the final analysis, the class contradiction, the locus of the class contradiction is in the colonial question. It is in the colonial question, because this is the Achilles heel of imperialism. The thing that is going to destroy imperialism is not going to be what white workers do either in Europe or North America. It's going to be what happens in the Middle East, in Africa, in the barrios, and the other colonies where people exist. That is the thing that's going to bring imperialism down. Ho Chi Minh, you know, was quoted even in his debate he participated in, the Communist International. He said that when you fight colonialism or you fight capitalism, like in Europe, you're only cutting off its tail. If you want to destroy capitalism, it's the colonies. It is the colonies that capitalism depends on. That's where you are. That's where I am. That's why we have to introduce, we have to get involved in this damn discussion. We have to, based on being able to articulate a reality that is greater than Europe and greater than North America, that comes from our experience and our requirements for survival. That's why anything that I wrote, if it's significant, it's based on that. That's what our responsibility is.
Anyone else?
Yeah.
I'm interested in looking at fundamental differences of Vietnam and Iraq. And the role that progressive white left played during the anti-war movement during Vietnam, and that it had an impact, and the deficiencies of that today.
That's good, because the imperialists learned from Vietnam. This is what I want you to really understand, though. The Vietnamese opposition to Vietnam War didn't happen overnight. By the white left, etc. And in fact, ordinary white people came to oppose Vietnam, the war in Vietnam, for the same reason they were timid about going to war at first, some of them, with the Gulf thing. You see, because the Vietnamese provided the political education to the white population by body bags. Uh-huh. Body bags. By the numbers of white people who came back in body bags, who came back dead, who came back on flag-draped coffins.
That's right.
And by the number of funerals that were happening throughout this country, yep. Where every white youngster could, male youngster could anticipate the possibility of going to die in Vietnam. And every white mother could anticipate losing a child and father going to die in Vietnam. This is what became a reality. The Vietnamese caused so many casualties, there were so many people dying in Vietnam, that it was a thing that mobilized white folks. Those who didn't go to Canada, getting the hell out of here so they'd be out of reach. And I have no problem saying this. I don't give a damn, because I know the same people who protested Vietnam, who opposed to Vietnam, walked over around the bodies of Black Panthers being shot down in the streets of America. It was the possibility of dying in Vietnam that mobilized the white community in opposition. That's not to say every individual who was opposed to Vietnam was opposed for that reason, but I'm saying that was the basis for the general opposition to Vietnam. Now, what the imperialists have done this time is, one, they don't show any flag draped coffins. Two, something like, I think it may be, I'm trying to remember if it's 40,000 or 40%, maybe 40,000, at least 40,000 of the people who are fighting in Vietnam are not U.S. citizens. They got Spanish surnames, and they're not even citizens of this country.
Right.
So it's not like that the little white kids are going to be dying here.
That's right.
From 20,000 to 40,000 of others of them are mercenaries and working for a mercenary corporation, so they don't meet, when they say numbers of U.S. troops died, they don't count. These are people who work, do military work. They're hired by corporations from the United States and work for the Pentagon, right. Armed forces, ex-military people, most of them, and they get paid lots of money.
Yes,
and those, like when you hear a contractor captured, that's one of them, generally speaking, that's done. So they don't go on the books as somebody who has died, U.S. soldier. And so what they've done is hold down the numbers of casualties at this juncture, so that there is not this mobilization of general white folk in opposition to the war. That's one of the things that's happened that's made a difference right now in terms of the outrage and et cetera. So I think those are two things. But another thing is true also, and that is that during Vietnam, it is true that around the world there were revolutionary movements that characterized themselves as revolutionary movements fighting for socialism, fighting for communism, fighting to overturn a system based on capitalism. They were everywhere. You know, not only Cuba, El Salvador, Nicaragua, all over Africa, all, you know, everywhere. But now, you don't hear. There's no revolutionary movement in Africa to speak of. There's no revolutionary movements except that's identifiable. I mean, you know, there are a handful of forces in Latin America who are doing some things, interesting things. But there's no generalized revolutionary movement. Although there are millions of people in opposition to what America is doing, the problem is that too few of them are organized into revolutionary movements designed to overturn this relationship that we have with imperialism.
Right.
Vietnam, that was not the case. And the Vietnamese had a voice and the ability to call on the people, people, to unite with them. One of the factors contributing to the U.S. having to get out of Vietnam was the African Revolution right here in this country.
That's right.
Where it made it necessary for them to not only fight in Vietnam, but to fight in Detroit and to fight in various other places in this country.
No.
And so those are the things that's missing today in this whole situation. And in Iraq, the Iraqi people, fighting a courageous battle that's teaching a lot of lessons. People are going to be able to sum up these lessons. But a problem with the Iraqi process is that it's not necessarily a revolutionary process. And it is not certainly not even characterized as a revolutionary process. And it is not something that even speaks with one voice to the people around the world. That's one of the things that makes it difficult, even though it is creating serious problems for the U.S. And I think that people will learn serious lessons from what the Iraqis are able to do against U.S. Power in Iraq. Today, I'm certainly learning a lot from taking notes every day. But that's one of the differences about Iraq and Vietnam.
Don
This will be my last question. Today people are speaking about a new paradigm in which colonized labor has now become marginalized. Can you add anything to that?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it could be. I'm not familiar with that, but I know what has not been marginalized. That's our resources. I know, for example, right now in Africa, we have a serious problem where the people, the resources of Africa, continue to be desired and wiped and ripped off on a regular basis. The people are the problem. And we believe AIDS to be a manufactured disease. And we believe things like Ebola, and et cetera, that's killing off Africans all over Africa. That the problem is that the resources are desired in Africa, but the people are not. And the resources are profound. Believe me when I tell you, they are profound. I mean, the coltan from Congo is not this old ancient one I've got. Necessarily, but cell phones and computers and airplanes, etc. You know, the coltan is a mineral that's necessary for that. And 80% of all the coltan comes from Africa, and 60% of that 80% is right there in Congo. 5 million Africans have died in Congo in the last 5 years or so over wars that's created by the United States and partially in contest with France, because France and the U.S. are engaged, responsible for terrible chaos all over the continent of Africa right now. So the wealth is there. The people are the problem. So I don't know about the labor becoming redundant. It's possible. But I know the resources have not become redundant, and that's the thing that they're ripping off every day as efficiently as they can.
Understanding the prison economy as we do understand it, if our labor is obsolete, why are they still bringing us in the prisons at such record numbers?
Well, I'm not saying the labor's obsolete, but I would tell you one of the reasons they're bringing us, it's a form of population control, which is a neo-colonial thing. I mean, one of the things that the imperialists are concerned about, read Patrick Buchanan's Death of the West. And he's not the only one who mentions this. And more you see this creeping out into other discussions. That there's a decline in the population of most of the European population. In fact, not sustainable. I think they said that there has to be a birth rate of over 2.5 percent, something. What is it?
Per family.
And that other than that, of society will not reproduce itself. And that's a concern all over Europe and also in Japan, I think it is. But also in this country, surprisingly, the birth rate of Africans have flattened out. You know why they flattened out? Because 12% of the African men in this country are in prisons. 12% of African men in this country are in prison. There's a form of population control, which is a long time recognized as a counterinsurgency method that you have to have population and resource control. But it is also means by which depopulate the African communities, you know, here. So that's the reality that we're confronted with right now. This is a hideous system. It has no redeeming qualities. And the point is that if we are going to get out of it, it's going to be because we create organizations comprised of men and women who are willing to make revolution their profession. Make revolution their profession, no matter what other occupations you may have. We've got to have men and women who are able to make revolutions a profession and be committed to overturning this kind of social system that has its foundation in injustices.
You know, in recent times, I haven't had the opportunity to hear your analysis, Chairman, on the cabinet, Bush's cabinet positions. You know, key people like Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, now the whole debate around Gonzales.
They ain't debating them anymore, they just brought him in.
Can you give your perspective on what do you think the purpose is of putting these quote-unquote people of color in such power?
I think it's important to say that. I think it's really important to mention that because, in my view, their intentions betray their recognition of our significance. They wouldn't put them there unless they are concerned about us. The first FBI agent ever was somebody that they recruited, and this was in the 1915 or 16, because they needed somebody to spy on the Garvey movement. The first black FBI agent, they integrated the FBI, which I'm sure pleased the hell out of the NAACP, right? But the purpose of this integration was they needed somebody who could go into the movement to destroy, to Marcus Garvey. And that's what we're looking at. When we see a Colin Powell, we'll be looking at a Buffalo soldier, and Condoleezza Rice, who I believe... I won't even say all the things because that takes us to a subjective level. But anyway, and now this other comrade Gonzalez, it is testimony about how significant they see us as being, that they need to have a non-white face out in the world that they intend to try and recolonize again. And so they will put out their white power in black faces, and white power in brown faces, and whatever else is necessary for white power to dominate the world if dressed in that fashion. Which is also something about the fallacy of the race analysis. Because they don't give a damn what race you are if you can function to keep the empire intact and to further the aims of the empire, they will use you. There was a woman named Joanne Little. Anybody ever hear of Joanne Little? She was a woman that lived in North Carolina. In the 1970s, she was locked up in jail. And when they came to the jail cell one day, they found the sheriff dead with his pants around his ankles and a sperm ejaculator over him. And so Joanne Little was eventually captured. She had stabbed him with a nice pick, I think it was. And she said the guy tried to rape her. And the sheriff's wife said he wouldn't try to rape her because he doesn't even like niggers. Right? But the reality is they don't care who you are.
That's right.
It's a question of power,
uh-huh.
And they will take you.
That's
they
right.
will take you. And it doesn't, it's got nothing to do with liking you or loving you. You know? Like Tina Turner said, what's love got you? And we just have to develop an analysis that recognizes our interests. I cannot be more serious than that, you know. Again, these institutions are here to seduce us and to turn us against our parents. And in fact, the longer we're here, the more we become ashamed of our parents. Ever notice that? Can't take anybody home, you know, with us, you know. To turn us against our parents, our communities, etc. And to convince us that somehow, because we're not like the rest, and we're so much smarter, that we can find a way to make it. And they'll either convince us that something is wrong with the rest of our community, otherwise they'd be just like you, or it is to convince you that somehow, because you're so special and smart, you're going to be able to go to the institution and play the system and help the people somehow by from inside, right, etc. I just believe that we have serious responsibilities. And I would tell you this, that all over, that Comrade mentioned that I've been doing a lot of traveling. I've all over South Africa, Suriname, in South America, all over Europe. And what I'm seeing is young people stepping forward. It's the most exciting thing. That's when you know that the revolution is really about to happen, because the thing is that young people, just by virtue of being on the planet, you have to solve the problems of the future. And, you know, just to solve the question of what am I going to do when I finish school? Where am I going to get a job? Or when I reach a certain age, how am I going to do this or that? Young people have to solve the problems of the future. And I'm telling you that the future is a revolutionary future. And more and more young people are discovering that. And I'm just calling on you. To step forward. You know, we need company in these trenches, you know, and it's going to make me feel a lot better knowing that the conference here in San Diego, wherever else you're going to be located, dug in. And our objective is to kick the ass of the ruling class. And I know that together we can do that. So, woohoo.
Right.
before we call it a night, I'm going to invite you to come and take a look at the literature and the information that Compañero brought from Barclay, from Oakland, Compañero Barclay. And it's amazing piece of knowledge, the culture of violence. If you want to have a sense of the role of white people in North America, it's a must. And it's not out of the mistaken analysis of racial differences or just race. It's an objective analysis that we must all be aware of and never to be ashamed of, in my opinion. The second announcement is that, as you all know, it takes resources and time and effort to bring O'Malley here to speak with us and to have an open dialogue. So we're hoping that you give us a donation, if at all possible, $1, 50 cents, whatever you may have, for some of the expenses, traveling expenses that are taking place. So I'm going to leave. Over here, if you get a chance, and if you have it, if you don't have it, it's not to worry about, or to cover some of the expenses. On behalf of Groundwork Books, we would like to thank you for being here tonight, and thank you for opening your mind and your heart to the discussion of Compañero O'Malley. And we would like to also thank you, O'Malley, for coming here tonight.